The second Aliyah in this week's parsha, in Parshas Matos. The second Aliyah here is dedicated to Nikmas Bnei Yisrael B'Midyan. It's a story which or a segment of the parsha which starts with the second Aliyah. Continues on into the parsha as it discusses the after effects and the rules following the actual waging of the war, but continues that way for a significant part of the parsha until Shishi. However, the main inauguration of the war against Midian is in the beginning of this week's parsha, in the second Aliyah of this week's parsha. In last week's parsha, Parshas Pinchas, following the story of Pinchas and the rewards to Pinchas, the pasuk says, "Tzarar." Hashem says to Moshe, "Tzarar es haMidyanim v'kisem osam." Want you to act with enmity towards the Midyanim. You should smite them because look what they try to do with you, with Pa'ar, with the matter of Kav Kazbi Bas Nasi Midyan Achosam. So they were instructed to make enemies of the Midyanim. However, in this week's parsha, it's taken a step further, and Hashem tells Moshe to take revenge for the Bnei Yisrael, the revenge of the Bnei Yisrael from the Midyanim, and only then, achar te Yosef el Amecha, only then is Moshe Rabbeinu going to be ready to die. So Moshe Rabbeinu proceeds to go ahead with this battle. One of the things which Chazal notes, which Rashi brings, is that even though Moshe Rabbeinu heard that this was something he had to do before he would die, and usually one would say if somebody says you won't die until you do this thing, there won't be in any rush to do it, but Moshe Rabbeinu did what he was told. He did what HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him to do without hesitation. The people were more resistant to it than Moshe Rabbeinu was. Moshe Rabbeinu had to extract the soldiers, Vayimasru Me'alfei Yisrael, they had to be given over. They weren't willingly participating when they heard that Misas Moshe Tuluya B'Davar, that the death of Moshe Rabbeinu was somehow connected to this. But Moshe Rabbeinu did it, and chose, or they gave over 1,000 members of each Shevet to go and fight against the Midyanim. And the Pasuk says, Vayishlachos Sam Moshe, and Moshe sent them, Elef Lamatel Atzava, 1,000 from each tribe to the army, Osam v'yas Pinchas ben Elazar HaKohen. Them, together with Pinchas ben Elazar the Kohen, uklei HaKodesh v'chatzaitis HaTrua b'yodai, with various holy and significant tools in his hand. So Pinchas would lead the Bnei Yisrael in this battle against Midian. Why Pinchas? Why of all people Pinchas? Says Rashi, Mimnai halach Pinchas v'lo halach Elazar. Why did Pinchas go? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, mi sheyischil b'mitzvah shahar HaKazbi Basur, yigmar. Brings the Medrash Tanchuma. The battle of Midian started when Kazbi Basur, Kazbi, the daughter of Tzur, one of the kings of Midian, a princess from Midian, was involved with Zimri, the Jewish prince from Shimon, and Pinchas rose up to stop them, and to stop them cold, to kill them while they were doing their act. So Pinchas was the one to originate the war. So therefore, Pinchas would be the one also to lead it to its completion. What's happening here is just a continuation of what Pinchas had started in that original battle. That's the first thing which Rashi says. Davar Acher, a second shot. Shehalach linkaim nikmas Yosef avi imoi. He went to avenge the vengeance of Yosef avi imoi, his mother's father, his grandfather Yosef. Why? Shenemar, because it says Vamidanim Machru Esai. The pasuk says that when Yosef was sent to Mitzrayim, who sold him to Mitzrayim? It was the Midyanim. The Midyanim, the same nation. And Pinchas, as Rashi goes on, Pinchas was the daughter of Elazar. Elazar ben Aaron Lokach Lo Mivnois Putiel. He took of the daughters of Putiel, and Putiel is associated with Yosef HaTzadik, Shepit Peit B'Yitzray. The Yosef HaTzadik who sort of talked down his Yetzer Hara, who stopped himself from committing a wrong. So therefore, because of this connection to Yosef, because of this failure that was there in the life of Yosef, connection to Yosef HaTzadik, because of this difficulty which the Minyanim were involved in bringing to Yosef, so Pinchas came to beat it back. Pinchas came to fight it. That's why he was appointed, in this sense, to fight it. That's the picture which Rashi draws here in this battle. Now, I'd like to spend our time tonight, as we learn this, to focus on this idea a little bit. We've discussed in past years that it's clear that this battle is an unusual battle. It's not the norm. The types of forces which are used are not the norms. The whole nature of the reaction is not the norm. There's much that's unique that's taught here. You know, last night, actually, at that event, Rav Lavav, as one of the speakers, suggested that we learn later in our parsha the rules of purging the kalim, the dishes which they got from Midian. You learn the halachas of how to kasher the kalim, that they couldn't use it without. So the Rishonim already asked the question, this is not the first battle the Jewish people have. It's not the first battle that the Jewish people have spoils from. They had spoils of Mitzrayim, they had spoils from Sichon and Og. So why specifically here does it teach about purging the kalim, about kashering the kalim? And the idea that he suggested, and that really is the essence of this battle, is again that this is a continuation of a holy war of sorts which Pinchas had to start against Midian. The women of Midian contaminated the Jewish people, corrupted the Jewish people by seducing them after themselves and after Pa'or, and after the Avodah Zarah which they brought with it. And when Klal Yisrael were told here by Moshe Rabbeinu to go, Hashem told Moshe, who told the Bnei Yisrael to go and wage this war against Midian, Nikras Bnei Yisrael Me'esa Midyanim, it wasn't simply a war of revenge, it certainly wasn't simply a war of conquest. It was a war to eradicate and wipe out that which had brought this corruption within the Jewish people. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, for instance, notes that Rashi says here that it was Elef Lamata L'chol Matos Yisrael, for all of the tribes of the Jewish people. Says Rashi, including Shevet Levi, brings the Sifrei, including the tribe of Levi. Now we know that the general rule was that Shevet Levi were Lo Archim Milchama. They didn't wage war, they weren't soldiers. They, generally speaking, did not participate in battles. And they didn't inherit the land, and they didn't share in the spoils. That was because most battles were material battles of conquest. Even conquering Eretz Yisrael, with the mitzvah which is involved, they're going to take Eretz Yisrael, which is the land that they're going to settle. And Levi wasn't settling it. Levi didn't get a portion in the land. So therefore they weren't involved in the whole process. They didn't fight in the wars either. However, in this battle they fought. And they fought because it wasn't a battle over conquest. It wasn't a battle over land. It was a battle for the purity of the Bnei Yisrael, to restore the purity of the Bnei Yisrael. And that's why we're going to find a special upset, which we have described in the third Aliyah, where they go and they get upset at the Anshei HaMilchama for salvaging, for saving some of the things from the battle, especially Kol Yisho Yoidas Ish, the Mishkav Zachar, especially the women who were involved somehow in the seduction of the Bnei Yisrael, because this is what this battle was about. It was about a purification of the Bnei Yisrael from the corruption which had been brought into them by the story of Midian. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu had to do it. It's an interesting thing that the way the Ramban learns, he says, no, they were fighting this battle because Moshe Rabbeinu did everything, all the mitzvahs, short of actually taking the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael. Almost putting it as a more conventional battle. He waged this war, he just couldn't go into Eretz Yisrael, so he didn't go further. But part of what seems to come out from the parasha is this other aspect, this other significant aspect of the battle. So, in that framework, let's look a little bit at this, at these interesting comments which we have, that Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who was instructed to do it before he dies, Nikmas B'nei Yisrael Me'es HaMidyanim, that Pinchas is the one who's supposed to lead the battle, who's supposed to lead the battle against them. Both of these things are matters of significance and of significant sensitivity. Midian is an interesting nation. We encounter them here. We want to look towards their, to identify their history. So we look back to the end of Parshas Chayei Sarah, where the Torah describes Avram Avinu's second marriage to Keturah, and the children that he had from that. And one of them was Midian. Right? Midian was a descendant of Avram. And he sent them off to, as the Pasuk says, he gave them gifts. He sent them away, gave them some parting gifts, and let them go to distinguish them from Yitzchak. Midian, like Yishmael, was sent away from Avram, even though they were descendants of Avram, and according to Chazal, since they equate Keturah with Hagar, they were descendants of Avram from the same person. In fact, Rishonim understand that this connection is the explanation of an enigma which you have in the story of Mechiras Yosef, which Rashi references here. What's that? Who did the Jewish people, who did the brothers of Yosef sell Yosef to? If you look at the Psukim, it alternates between speaking about the Yishmaelim and the Midianim. What's going on? Were they Yishmaelim or were they Midianim? So there are different ways to approach this. Some understand, well, he sold them to one, another one came and pulled it out, he sold them to one, and then they sold to the other. Some understand that one of them is a Yishmael, Yishmaelim over here is really a term for like Bedouins and travelers, right? But the actual proper name of the nation were Midianim. But one of the classic interpretations, which is found in the Rishonim, is that Yishmaelim equals Midianim. That they were all one big family, as we see that Avram Avinu from Keturah, from Hagar, had Yishmael and had Midian. And so the titles of the nations, to some degree, are interchangeable. It's an interesting thing. It's something to consider, to think about. The fact that Yosef goes through the hands of Yishmael on the way to Mitzrayim, I think we've spoken about it before, Yishmael came from Mitzrayim to the Jewish people. Right? Hagar came from Mitzrayim to Avram, he had Yishmael, then it was sent back to Mitzrayim. Now when a Jew, like Yosef, is being taken back to Mitzrayim, the courier between the Jewish people and the Egyptians is a Yishmaeli, and maybe also a Midiani, also Keturah is from Hagar. There's some bridge there, there's some connection. And it's fascinating because it's on the way in and it's on the way out. Because the Bnei Yosef goes down to Mitzrayim through the Midianim. And then, who ultimately would lead the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim was Moshe. And Moshe Rabbeinu, he was in Mitzrayim, and then he had to run away. And where did he run away to? He ran away to Midian, where he found Yisrei, where he found Yisrei from Midian. In fact, again, I'm just trying to like draw the line so you can see how the picture sort of comes together a little bit. Rashi quotes I mentioned to you this evening that it says that Pinchas was the one who was charged to go to wage the battle. Why? Because he was Mibnais Putiel. He was Mibnei from the children of Elazar, who was married to a woman who was Mibnais Putiel, from the daughters of Putiel. Who was Putiel? So I mentioned to you half of Rashi, half of what the Gemara says in the Gemara Bava Basra, if I remember correctly, that it was more in Saita, also maybe I think it's the Gemara Bava Basra, if I'm not mistaken, that Putiel was Yosef, who was Mefatfet B'Yisrael, who spoke against his Yeter. But the other pshat, the other explanation is that he was from the children of Yisrael. And Putiel was because he was Mefatim Agolim L'Avodah Zarah, because he fattened cows to offer them to the various idols that he served. And in that sense, it's sort of a derogatory term. And the Gemara says that when Pinchas went to rise up against Zimri ben Salu, the people of Shimon said, "How dare you? You who come from Yisrael, who pite magolim la'avodah zarah, who fatten cows to offer to the avodah zarah. But in a sense, what you have here is you have coming together Yisrael and Yosef, Midyanim. You know, they come together in Pinchas. In Pinchas, we see the focus with Yosef. When we speak of Putiel, is somehow the relationship to the Midyanim. Yisrael himself is from the Midyanim. Hadavar tzarech Talmud. It requires understanding. There's something that's active here that we have to understand. We don't need much imagination to know that the issue with the Midyanim was the issue that presented itself most obviously with Cosby Batzur, the seduction of the Bnei Yisro, the immorality that the Midyanim women had and they brought against upon the Jewish people. As we discussed before, that is the issue. Pinchas, we know, is the one who wages war against this immorality. He wages the war against Zimri and Cosby originally, and he continues and follows through, as Rashi says, finishes the job here against the daughters of Midian. And as we discussed last week, Pinchas is therefore the champion of the Bris Milah, the champion of the covenant, of the preservation of the integrity of the Jewish people in this particular area. And we understand now, perhaps a little bit deeper, the fact that Yosef specifically is taken down by the Midianim to Mitzrayim, and now there's a revenge of Yosef against Mitzrayim. Yosef she pitpeit b'Yitzray. Right? He's called Putiel. I mean, he had a name. His name was Yosef. But he's called Yosef, the one who was able to talk away the Yetzer Hara. And it was specifically referring to this Yetzer Hara of immorality when the wife of Potiphar tried to seduce Yosef HaTzadik. And this was his strength. And it was this that Pinchas was coming to continue to fight against the Midianim. When the Midianim were bringing Yosef down to Mitzrayim, like when Yishmael would bring Yosef down to Mitzrayim, it's because what's Mitzrayim? Mitzrayim are the shtufei zima, are the ones who are absorbed in immorality, overwhelmingly involved with immorality. And that was a big challenge for the Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, like we discussed last week. And that was a big challenge for Yosef HaTzadik that we discussed last week. And Yosef triumphed. He overcame it, despite the worst intentions of the Midianim. Despite their attempts, Yosef overcame. And now Pinchas, who was here to see the follow-through, the continuation of Yosef's successful triumph over the Midianim, the preservation of the purity of the Jewish people, so Pinchas comes to finish the battle against the Midianim, finishing the battle of his grandfather, of Yosef HaTzadik. I mentioned at Shalashuddas last week, a fascinating, beautiful, beautiful thing which is found in the Zayar in last week's Parsha, in Parshas Pinchas. The Zayar says that Pinchas is spelled in the Chumash Pei Yud Nun Ches Samach. Pei Yud Nun Ches Samach. Excuse me. Pei Yud Nun Ches Samach. With an extra letter Yud. Yosef, we find in the, we say it actually, we've said it today, Shir Shal Yom of Thursday, Eidus B'Yehosef Samay B'Tzeisei L'Eretz Mitzrayim, was a testament in Yosef, when he went to Eretz Mitzrayim, Sfasli Yadati Yeshma, a language which I didn't know I heard. And Chazal interpret, the Zohar brings, that Yosef HaTzadik, when the wife of Potiphar tried to seduce him, so he was getting out of it. And the way he got out of it, what we're saying, Sasle Adati Yeshma, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't understand your language. I'm from a different place. Yosef, who we know knew Ayin L'Shoines, he knew 70 languages, but this was his way of getting away from the wife of Potiphar. And that's Eidus, the testimony be Yosef. So the Zayar makes the beautiful connection. Yosef has an extra hey, Yosef. Pinchas has an extra yud, Pinchas. The yud and the hey spell the name of Hashem. What we learned in last week's parsha, Shiftei ka Eidus li Yisrael. Remember how all the tribes, they put the yud and the hey around their name, Hachanochi, Hafalui, right? They put the yud and the hey to say, to testify that their integrity was pure, that there was no immoral kind of pollution, there was nothing that had come, the Mitzrim hadn't taken advantage of the Jewish women. Eidus b'Yosef. That's a battle which was started by Yosef when he overcame the lures of the wife of Potiphar and was completed by Pinchas, his grandchild, when Pinchas stood up against Zimri ben Salu from Midian. It's a little bit of the Eimek, a little bit of the depth here in this notion of what Rashi says. Why Pinchas? Well, he started the battle against Midian. That's true. So he's finishing the battle that he started against Midian. You don't need a big, great memory to remember that. That was last week's, the beginning of last week's parasha. But then says Rashi, a second pshat. And the second pshat is that he was not just continuing that, but he was actually settling some score from his great-grandfather Yosef HaTzadik, which was also, he was also brought in by Midian. In light of this Zayar, right, you understand, what, how do you know he was related to Yosef? Because he's called from Putil Shepitpet B'Yitzray, right? Sold by the Midianim. What does it mean? It doesn't say anything specific. But here we have it. There's the issue of Pitpet B'Yitzray. And that was the battle of Yosef. That was how Yosef started it, and that's what Pinchas is continuing here. And in fact, if you look in the Maral, in the Gurariya, in his commentary on Rashi, so he brings this idea, and he says, don't think necessarily that Pinchas was saying, oh, I'm going to get them for selling my father, my great-grandfather Yosef down to Mitzrayim. He says, this is not a conscious battle against those enemies. When Moshe saw that Yosef had been sold by the Midianim, he saw that the Midianim stood in opposition to Yosef. Shilu loikein, if not for that, the sale of Yosef wouldn't have happened through the Midianim. Right, it makes sense that the antagonist to Yosef would be the one who stands as his opposite. So Yosef's the opposite of Midian. Yosef was especially careful and moral when it came to these areas. And the Midianim did the opposite. They were mafkir, they let their wives free in order to go and seduce the Jewish people. And that's why this was Yosef, a descendant of Yosef, Shepitpet B'Yitzray, says the Maral, going against Midian. Me'acher Shupitpet B'Yitzray, Hu Hepach L'Midian. Yikablu Heim Chayvish L'Ma'idei Pinchas, Shumizari Shal Yosef, Sheigoder Be'erva Hepach L'Midianim. They'll get their punishment through Pinchas, who's a descendant of Yosef, who's careful about Erva. Pinchas is careful about Erva. They stand as the very opposites. That's the way it comes together. The yud and the hey of Yosef and of Pinchas, to be godur be'erva, to be careful about this issue of immorality, that's the cycle that completes in order to be able to go to battle against them. That by itself is something important and significant. But it's not enough. It's when we're not finished. Why? Because as we said before, the Midianim, yes, they figure in the sale of Yosef down to Mitzrayim, and Pinchas is their enemy and comes by it honestly as a descendant of Yosef. But Moshe Rabbeinu started this parsha. Hashem said to Moshe, "Nekayim nikmas bnei Yisrael me'es ha-midyanim." Baruch atah Adonai Elohim melech ha'olam shekol ha'olam. Hashem said to Moshe, "I want you to take revenge of the bnei Yisrael from the Midyanim. And then you can die. And then you can die." Why? Why did Hashem say to Moshe Rabbeinu that Misasoi Teluya Bedavar, that his death should depend on him waging this war against Midian? It was something that Moshe Rabbeinu would have to do. So, Chazal note, and this is something which is found in
in many places, that the idea was that Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps would have been seen as reticent to wage this nekam against Midian, because after all, Moshe Rabbeinu, right, the language which was used 2 weeks ago in the parsha by Rashi, quoting Balak, was Manhigon Shelzeh b'Midian Nisgadil. Moshe grew up in Midian. Moshe spent many years of his life in Midian when he was on the run from Mitzrayim. So Moshe Rabbeinu should go and take the revenge against Midian. Now, on the one hand, some understand that Moshe Rabbeinu could not do it himself. Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't do it himself for this very reason, because since Moshe Rabbeinu was someone who was taken care of by the Midianim, it wasn't appropriate for him to raise arms against them. But it still was important for him to make sure that the job was finished. And the idea here that we're taking revenge against Midian, that we charge Pinchas with taking revenge against Midian, when he's a descendant of Yosef who has it in for the Midianim, but he's also a descendant of Yisrael, who was Kayan Midian, who himself was from Midian. So, do you understand that I'm trying to point out how complex this matter becomes? Where we're charging Moshe Rabbeinu specifically to take this revenge against Midian? Where Moshe Rabbeinu specifically grows up, develops to some degree in Midian, in this country, with this terrible corruption, with these difficult issues? I just would note to you, just in order to, again, to just broaden the view of this a little bit, Moav and Midian both sent their daughters against the Jewish people. And we didn't fight against Moav. So one reason we didn't fight against Moav, because maybe we saw them as not being the primary movers here in this story. But there's also another thing, which is, well, from Moav is going to come Rus HaMoaviah, the mother of David HaMelech, the grandmother of David HaMelech. So we have to be careful, we have to realize there's something there. Well, from Midian, there's something too. Tzipora Eshes Moshe. Tzipora, the wife of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a tricky thing. How are we to understand this? Moshe Rabbeinu is specifically charged, Misasei Tluya B'Davar, that he has to somehow distinguish, he has to wage this war against Midian. He has to wage this war against Midian. Now we could say that when Moshe Rabbeinu went to Midian, he was of course going a step down, a step out of Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim were shtufei Zima. They were completely absorbed in Zima. Midian, you know, on the one hand they came from Hagar, who would have that property as a Shivcha Mitzris in a certain way. On the other hand, they came from Avram, something in between. Maybe it's again a way station, just like Yosef went through Midian to get down to Mitzrayim. Moshe Rabbeinu goes through Midian to come out of Mitzrayim. It seems to be something inherent. That's why they were, like the Maral says, that's why they were misnaged with Yosef. That's why they were opposed to Yosef. That's why they were seen as the opposite of Yosef. This is maybe the first time we see it in full strength when they followed the Atzas Bilam. But it seemed to be they're very much bekach in potential in terms of their character preceding this. So what is it? So why is Moshe Rabbeinu here in this thing, fighting this war against Midian? Why does Moshe Rabbeinu marry a woman from Midian? Right? How does this happen? Remember that in the original confrontation, which Pinchas had to step into, part of what paralyzed Moshe Rabbeinu was because they said to him, "Bas Yisrei Mihi Tirlach." If you say that this daughter of Midian is forbidden, could you explain to me, Moshe, how did you marry the daughter of Yisrei? She's also from Midian. So Moshe Rabbeinu was to some degree frozen until Pinchas came and stood up and did what had to be done. So there's a vulnerability of Moshe Rabbeinu here in this parsha. Now Tzipora is a different bird, excuse the pun, right? Tzipora is from a different, from a whole different thing. She's from Midian, but somehow or another, not quite. But how do we deal with this? How do we deal with this? How are we going to be able to understand this? I want to suggest something. And it's not pashut, it's not simple, but I think it's it may have some truth and some value. The Maral says a very interesting thing. The Maral in the Gvuras Hashem, he speaks about Tzipora and this interesting phenomenon of Moshe Rabbeinu marrying Tzipora. And he says, Tzipora, what's the name Tzipora mean? Tzipora is Nafegala, a bird, birdie. Right, that was her name. Say the first lady of the Jewish people was Lady Bird. Right? She was right to Tzipora. So what kind of a name is that? Why is she called the Tzipora? Right, Chazal say, there's a Chazal which says she purified the house of Moshe Rabbeinu or the house of Yisrael, like a tzipor, like a bird is used in the Torah many times in purification. Maral says a very interesting thing. He says that tzipora, miloshen tzipor, birds, oifos, Chazal tell us, nivru min harakak. Rakak means where you go to the beach, you have the sand, and you have the water, and then there's the spot where the water hits the sand, right? The muddy part. So the problem is like this. In one place, it says, in Perek Beis of Bereishis, it says that Hashem created the birds from the earth, like the animals. In another place, in the fifth day of creation, it says Hashem created the birds from the water. I mean, amayim nivru. Amayim nishamayim. So the Gemara says, so the idea is, min arakak nivru. They were created not from the water and not from the earth, but from where the water meets the earth, sort of like in between. That's where they were created from. That's the quality of the bird. So the Maral says, that was in a sense the nature of Tzipora. Tzipora wasn't quite from Midian. She wasn't quite from the Bnei Yisrael. You couldn't sort of like put her anyplace. She was an independent, free-flying bird, somehow removed, that you couldn't put her in any of this place. That's why of the daughters of Yisrael, she was from Midian, but she wasn't from Midian. She was, you know, somewhere in between. That's more or less. It's more or less the approach here, which the Maral takes. So what I want to say, to some degree like this. Last week, we talked about the idea that the Eidus B'Yohaisef, that the purification of the Bnei Yisrael, in order to be able to come into Eretz Yisrael, the testimony to the fact that they weren't corrupted by the Egyptians, wasn't presented when they came out of Egypt. It was presented as they're about to go into Eretz Yisrael. We spoke about the idea that it's specifically as they come into Eretz Yisrael, as they're coming to the land, that they have to be pure with the bris, with the covenant. The covenant which is in the flesh. The covenant which is in the flesh, which Pinchas becomes the champion of, which wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't the champion of, wasn't that way in the Midbar in the same way. That's a little bit of the difference. Moshe Rabbeinu left Tzipora, or he sent away Tzipora. As part of Matan Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu separated from Tzipora. Fitting with this idea that we spoke about last week, right, that whereas there's such a thing as using the Bris Milah in a way which is enhancing the connection of the spirit and the material. That's why the Tikkun of the Bris, what the Bris fixes, was necessary before they came and took possession of the land. But Moshe Rabbeinu didn't take them into the land. And Moshe Rabbeinu didn't have the Tikkun of the Bris. And Moshe Rabbeinu, in that sense, separated from his wife Tzipora, as part and parcel of his Matan Torah. He didn't fix it. To some degree, to the greater degree, he separated from it. Remember the first time we meet the second time we meet Tzipora? The first time we meet Tzipora is where she invites Moshe Rabbeinu to come and he marries her. The second time we meet Tzipora is when they're going back to Mitzrayim. And their child needs a bris.
And Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't do the bris. Who did the bris? Tzipira did the bris. Tzipira, his wife, from Midian, right? She's the one who did the bris. Tzipira, the daughter of Yisrael. Tzipira, the aunt of Pinchas. Right? She did the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't do the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu was in some sense removed from the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with Tzipira couldn't be called what Pinchas would call it, some kind of a tikkun, some kind of fixing of the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with Tzipira was somehow, in some way, different. How exactly to categorize it? I don't know. I'm not sure. It stood as a contradiction to him being able to learn the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And at the same time, on some level, it was Moshe Rabbeinu's connection to Tikkun HaBris, to being able to make the correction of the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu's relationship with Yisrael was, in this sense, this union of opposites, to the point where there's something which comes out in the middle which is neither here nor there. Yisrael is from Midian. Midian represents corruption of the bris, and Moshe Rabbeinu represents that which is completely removed from the realm of the bris. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't need a bris. He was born mohu. Moshe Rabbeinu was completely removed from that whole realm of connection, and Midian, in a sense, was completely absorbed in that realm of connection. And when Moshe Rabbeinu goes with Chaisnai, with his father-in-law, with Yisrael, in a sense, it's the meeting of these two opposites. Tzipira, somehow in the middle of it. Tzipira is somehow in the middle of it. And making this possibility, making this happen. Remember, Rashi, Vayichad Yisrael al kol hatayva, when Yisrael came to join the Jewish people, after Matan Torah, it says Yichad Yisrael. Vayichad Yisrael, says Rashi, Vayichad means simply that he was happy for all the good. But Vayichad is from the term chad, sharp. Says Rashi, Shehevir cherev chad al basarei. He took a sharp sword and put it across his flesh. What does that mean? He joined the Jewish people. He got a bris. This was Putiel meeting Yosef Shapit Peit B'Yitzray. Maybe what I'm saying is a little vague. I don't know. Right? Yosef. Yosef was the one who we see as fixing the bris. He was able to overcome a desire. He was one who fixed the bris. Yosef, remember in Mitzrayim, he wanted to give a bris milah to all of the Egyptians. When they came to him for food, because they were starving and Yosef was in charge, he said, I'll give you food, just have a bris and I'll give you food. They went to Paro, what are you saying? He says, if Yosef says it, you better do it. Yosef, in this sense, we found in many ways, if you remember in past things, we've talked about the difference between Yosef and Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't even give his own child a bris. Yosef gave a bris to all of the Egyptians. Fascinating little thing. You know that all the Jewish people had a bris before Pesach, when they left Mitzrayim? Because it says an uncircumcised person can't eat from it. And the Jewish people didn't keep the bris milah in Mitzrayim. So what happened? So that eve, they all had bris milah. That's what Chazal tell us. V'shuv melech b'nei Yisrael sheinis. It doesn't say it though in the pasuk explicitly. It's hidden. It's left for the medrash to uncover. When they were 40 years later, when they were going into Eretz Yisrael, the pasuk makes a whole big deal talking about Yehoshua going and circumcising the Jewish people before they entered Eretz Yisrael, but not with Moshe Rabbeinu. Why? Why is it hidden? Because Moshe Rabbeinu is not openly mentioned with the bris. Kachazeh. Moshe Rabbeinu is above it.
He's somehow removed from it. That's the Moshe Rabbeinu that we know. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't circumcise his son, who was born without a bris, whose lifelong bond is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not with his wife Tzipira. But at the same time, on some level, Moshe Rabbeinu spends time in Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu does have a wife, and that wife is Tzipira. It's somehow bringing Moshe Rabbeinu to that world. It's somehow linking Moshe Rabbeinu to that possibility. Bringing Yisrael into the Jewish people. Somehow bringing that correction of Yosef to somehow have its place. Not a straightforward matter. But that's to some degree what happens. Now Moshe can't fight Zimri ben Solu, who says, Moshe Rabbeinu, what about you and Tzipira? Moshe Rabbeinu and Tzipira was something different. As we say, Tzipira, I'm just sort of like borrowing loosely from this maral, she was not quite here or there. You can't speak of the relationship between Moshe and Tzipira using the classic categorizations. Moshe Rabbeinu can't fight the battle against the Midianim himself. He has to empower Pinchas. He has to get other people to do it. But on the other hand, he can't die before that battle is fought. On the other hand, the idea of somehow overcoming the Midianim in those terms, it's something which has to happen before Moshe Rabbeinu. Before Moshe Rabbeinu leaves this world. We're going to learn later in Parshas Matos how the Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven didn't want to go over the Yarden, over the Jordan in Eretz Yisrael. Here we're told it's because they wanted to stay where there was good grazing land for the sheep. They didn't want to go into Eretz Yisrael, which was not as good grazing land for the sheep. They weren't farmers. In Parshas Vezayis HaBracha, the Pasuk, Rashi explains the Pasuk that Gad really wanted to stay there because they wanted to stay where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one of the Midbar, the one who didn't take them into Eretz Yisrael, the one who stayed out of Eretz Yisrael. And God wanted to stay, Kisham Chalkas Mechaikek Safon, they wanted to stay where Moshe Rabbeinu was. It seems that on some level, only somebody like Moshe Rabbeinu, who is so removed from the whole realm of Zima, the whole realm of those kinds of relationships, is the one who is able to get the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu after taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. He somehow is able to do it in a way differently than anybody else. Now, Yosef could have also taken the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. In that world, in that realm, conquering them, taking them over. Pinchas, in a sense, is completing the return of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael that started, that the beginning of its removal started when Yosef was taken down to Mitzrayim. Yosef somehow is more connected to Mitzrayim. Yosef has this desire and knows how to address it with the bris. Pinchas has it and knows how to address it with the bris. Midian very much is centered in it. So we understand these people as the ones to cure it, as the ones to address it. But somehow standing behind it is Moshe Rabbeinu, who's even above it, who's even above the bris. Moshe Rabbeinu takes us out of Mitzrayim, can't take us into Eretz Yisrael. In the Midbar, right, is this place, it's this island, removed from the whole realm of the Bris. Can't respond properly to a confrontation from Midian. Can't respond completely to it. Nikoim nikmas bnei Yisrael meis hamidyanim achar teyasef el amecha. this, perhaps, this broad idea, I hope I've conveyed with some level of clarity. It's a broad, it's a little vague. But perhaps this is, to some degree as well, what we have here expressed in the point we made before, which is Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata. 12 tribes, Levi is fighting this battle. It's not a regular battle. In a sense it is. War is being fought. Weapons are being used. But it's a battle which has as its root holiness. Now you all know the beautiful Chazal, which was made famous a few years ago, right? And 35 years before that by Rav Chaim Shmulevitz. Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata Latzava. The Pasuk says, 1,000 for a tribe, 1,000 for a tribe for the army. So simply that's saying, 1,000 for each and every tribe. However, Chazal say no. For every soldier that went to fight the battle, there was somebody who stayed behind who had the job of davening for that soldier. There was Elef Lamata, Elef Lamata. Each tribe had to provide 1,000 daveners and 1,000 soldiers corresponding to each one. There's some blending here in this battle of Midian between the spiritual front and the military front and the physical front. There's something which keeps them separate, but yet at the same time has them join forces. When Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's fighting the battle against Midian, Pinchas is the one who's fighting the battle against Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go. If we have this notion of Elef Lamata, 1,000 fighting in their shuls and 1,000 fighting on the battlefields, well, this battle is the battle of Moshe Rabbeinu fighting in the shul, so to speak, and Pinchas fighting on the battlefield. It's Moshe Rabbeinu in this world of the abstraction, this world where Mila doesn't even exist, where it's only connection to Hashem Yisbarach, and Pinchas, where Mila does exist, where the purity is brought home, where the immoral is conquered, not escaped, where it's taken over. That's perhaps what we see here. Nekayim nikmas b'nei Yisrael meis ha'vidyar ha'machar te'yosef el'amecha. Klal Yisrael, we got the Torah. We separated to get the Torah. And then Hashem told us all to go back to regular life. And he said, Moshe, you stay behind, you stay separate. Moshe Rabbeinu was somehow removed. And his being removed provided the energy and the power and the direction for all those, the rest of Klal Yisrael, who were connected, to remain with the power of purity that they got, that we got from Moshe Rabbeinu. B'Midyan. This is the confusing bridge of Midyan. Each one approaches it in its own way. But Yosef would overcome it. Moshe Rabbeinu, to some degree, would be able to mix with it and not be affected by it, because he was so, in a sense, removed from it, and would end up to be ultimately so separate from it. His connection to it was so tangential as it was strong. This perhaps is the idea and something for us to consider and to take with us. Ultimately, the Kibush Haaretz requires meeting the physical head on and being able to bring to it Kedusha, bring to it sanctity. But it works when we're successful, when what stands behind it is to some degree a certain removal from it. A Moshe Rabbeinu, an Elef Lamata, someone who's not curing the bris, but Nailat Keshehu Mol, somehow separated from the whole thing. And so something for us to recognize and to consider. We said, you know, we talk about the overwhelmingly powerful challenge that's in our time, when this realm of bris, of the purity of the bris, as we live in a world which is in itself like Egypt, overwhelmed with zima, overwhelmed with lust and immorality, the tactics have to be familiar. There's the purification, there's Moshe Rabbeinu, there's Chalkas Mechaykek. Somehow, some portion so removed from that passion is completely wrapped up with the connection to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam that really knows nothing else, that ultimately is the power behind that which will enable us to use our passions properly as we seek to sanctify the bris and to be zeicha from bris shechasamta bivsareinu to the bris haaretz. Can you